You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
A Friday, a Buffalo football Friday, here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR Sports Radio 550. It is brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash? Call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, start your game day the Crosby's way. We have a lot to get to today. Sal Capaccio with you. And it's going to start pretty soon because we're going to get Sean McDermott on a little bit earlier than normal today. It's a bit of a different schedule for the Bills this week because they play Monday night against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Sean will come aboard about 10:15. So 15 minutes from now, as I always said, keep your head on a swivel. Keep your ears on a swivel. I guess that would be impossible not to do both if one of them's on a swivel. If your head's on a swivel, your ears are on a swivel. So keep them both right there and be ready because could be a couple minutes before, could be a couple minutes after. But we will have Sean McDermott at about 10:15 a.m. We'll get a look at injuries first, as we always do. And then we'll take a look at, you know, the game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, which I want to get into in a little while. We won't get the actual injury designations yet today for the Bills for Monday night. Those won't come out until tomorrow. Because it's a Monday night game, the actual injury designations for the game, meaning questionable, out, they don't come out until tomorrow. However, it looks like we already know Bernard and Johnson are out. That's been stated by the head coach. They're not playing Monday night. As far as Dewan Smoot, Javon Solomon, Casey Tuhill, they've been limited at practice. They were yesterday. We'll see what their status will be today and then tomorrow and then the game status overall. So we'll get all of that from Sean McDermott when he joins us at about 10:15 a.m. I think I'm being a little hypocritical on something. I think I am. I'm not totally sure, though. But then again, I guess you could kind of go a lot of different ways with a question or topic like this. I was listening to Jeremy and Joe, and actually I saw Jeremy's tweet a little bit earlier about like what radical change would be next that you'd support in sports. And I've been thinking about maybe like raising the crossbar for field goals. Now, the reason is because I just think these field goal kickers are getting so good and their legs are so strong. It's kind of incentivizing teams to just kick field goals as soon as they cross midfield, essentially, right? Ah, we got a 60-yarder or whatever. Not a big deal. The guy can make it. If you raise the crossbar from 10 feet up to, I don't know, let's say 12, 13, 15 feet even, which would be a major raise, but a couple feet, maybe teams are like, okay, we can't do that. We need to go for it here. But that would probably have the reverse effect and teams would punt more. And I don't want that either. I feel like it's getting too easy for kickers. And I don't know if I should feel that way or not. But the reason why I think I'm hypocritical is I'm also the guy that was totally in favor of banning the shift, like in baseball. Get rid of the shift. Come on, what are we doing? I'm glad they banned the shift in baseball. So I didn't like having rules in place that would kind of take away someone's ability to hit the ball somewhere, right? And now I want to put one into place where they actually, you know, would take the ability away from the kicker. All right, hey, how about this? We are ready to rock and roll. We have Sean McDermott right now on the Western Hotline, so we're going to get to him here on a Buffalo Bills Football Friday.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Automotive. For whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
And Sean McDermott joins me on the West Her Hotline. Thank you very much, Coach. Always appreciate you. A little bit different schedule this week, obviously, but hope you're enjoying your Friday.
I am, and I hope everyone out there is as well. I'm looking forward to a great weekend.
Thanks a lot, Coach. Now, we know that the official game designation injury report doesn't come out until tomorrow, but can you update us on anything happening as far as today and where guys are maybe trending for the week? We know what you said earlier, that Terrell Bernard and Taron Johnson will not play, but there have been a few guys that were limited yesterday.
Yeah, so Smoot and Solomon, Dwan Smoot and Javon Solomon are both limited today, and we'll continue to take that one day at a time leading up to game time here.
Sean, what did you guys like about Dwan Smoot when you signed him in free agency, and what have you seen from him since he's been a member of the Buffalo Bills?
Right, so he was coming off of an Achilles last year that he suffered the year before, I believe the tail end of the year before. So last year, I just loved the way how he was kind of gritted through that and worked through it. And, you know, usually that's a tough injury to come off of, much like an ACL is that first year. And so we were hoping that he could return to form, you know, the following year. And he's had a real good training camp. Unfortunately, got hurt before our first game there in practice. So we're anxious to get him back. And you know, we'll see how this week goes. I think he's trending in the right direction. So we're hopeful for that.
And then on Javon Solomon, you haven't seen him play yet. Can you just talk a little bit about the rookie and his, you know, kind of ascension or maturity, you know, coming in as a rookie until now, whatever word you want to use, I guess, you know, what you've seen from him going back to April when you first saw him on the football field?
Right. So, you know, out of Troy, and he's done a good job. He, you know, I think there's an adjustment for any rookie transitioning from the college game to our game, in particular coming from, let's just call it a smaller yet highly successful program in Troy. And Solly was very productive there as a pass rusher. And, you know, whenever you can do that, it catches people's eye. And so I think he's done a real good job. He's got good habits. And although he's been hurt as well, he hasn't been on the field much. Yeah. Again, we're hopeful to get him out there if we can this weekend.
Sean, what has allowed Bailyn Spector to be able to step in and, you know, seemingly make a pretty smooth transition here as your middle linebacker? I mean, and everything that goes into it, lining guys up. He had to do that pretty quickly in the Miami game. He winds up with 10 tackles in the game, including one for a loss. He's got to be the guy that understands the defense. He's been here with you for 3 years. What has allowed him to be able to do that?
You know, he goes out there and he does his job. I mean, he takes a lot of pride in his job, and whether it's his role being special teams or like he did last Thursday night on the Thursday night game against Miami. He went out there and did his job, and doesn't ask a lot of questions and doesn't look for a lot of the spotlight. I think he really enjoys playing football. He enjoys being on our team. And I think the years that he's been here has helped as well, just his comfort level with our system and what we ask of our players to do defensively.
Sean McDermott on the West Hur Hotline. Bills take on the Jaguars Monday night. We'll get into the Jags in a moment. Of course, a couple familiar faces. But Sean, I think I need to ask you about this whole thing that the league and everybody's talking about with the scoring being down and too high safeties. And I don't want to ask you something that's going to compromise strategy. So let me ask you from a macro perspective. You've been in this league a long time. You've seen the ebbs and flows of offenses and defenses. Are you ever surprised, you know, when something gets to a point where it seems like it's, you know, kind of a radical shift in how teams are approaching? Is that just kind of what happens over the lifespan of this game?
Right. I mean, the game changes. The game in some ways stays the same, and it's an evolution. It seems like the game is always moving and trending, and so you're trying to stay out in front of it as best you can. And whether that's how you build your roster or how, you know, you scheme your playbook in all three phases or what have you. So I think that's part of the challenge and what makes it such a chess game year to year and week to week.
And then obviously you have a couple different coordinators here this year, younger coordinators who are kind of, you know, their entry point now is some of these changes that are going on. When you look at Bobby Babich and you look at Joe Brady and you decide on who's going to run your offense and defense, do you kind of think about that and how, like, kind of forward thinking they are, what they've seen, what they've been through, and what they can bring to the table for some of these changes that happen pretty drastically?
I do. You know, they're young guys and have both. I guess each of them has a different level of experience in that coordinator position to this point, you know, Joe being a little bit more experienced at the college level, albeit, and then a year or two in Carolina there, and then last season for those eight or so games. So Bobby being new to the position this year, both very passionate about the game, always trying to stay on top of what's trending, and both spend a lot of time at their job trying to become the best that they can become. So I believe we're in good hands there. I know it's early in the season. They'll continue to grow. They'll continue to learn, and they're going to be really good in the future here.
Jaguars at Bills Monday night, 7:30 p.m. start. Of course, Gabe Davis making his return to Buffalo. Mitch Morse, these are guys that spent several years with you in Buffalo. You know, they're coming. It seems like every week you're playing somebody that you're very familiar with. But just a bit on those guys and what they meant to your organization for the years that they were here with you, Sean.
Yeah, they mean an immense amount to me, to our organization still. We wish them well, their families as well. We're happy that they're happy. And listen, it's unfortunate. That's the kind of the nature of the business from time to time. And you wish you could have everyone just stay here, right? Such is life in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day, we're proud of those guys. And we're looking forward to competing on Monday night, looking forward to the environment that is the environment around Western New York on primetime games, and hearing our 12th man and that Bills Mafia guiding us all the way through all four quarters.
You also coached with Doug Peterson for a couple of years, I believe, back in Philadelphia. What do you remember about being on the staff with him back in 2009-2010?
Yeah, really good coach. You know, Doug was actually a player there when I was there.
Oh, yeah.
Doug was our quarterback my first year there under Andy. And then, you know, soon the quarterback position changed over to Donovan McNabb, of Syracuse fame. So everyone knows Donovan. And, but Doug was a great leader on the field and had a great, mind for the game. And so it was no surprise that he decided to coach and that he's done the job that he has. He's been very successful and won a Super Bowl.
And obviously brings a talented offense into Buffalo. What are the challenges against Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, and the group that he brings to Buffalo?
Well, you said it. So a year ago, their receiving core very talented. This year, the same. They don't have Ridley anymore. They've replaced him with the rookie there.
Brian
out
Thomas.
Of LSU. Brian Thomas, yeah. So thank you for that. And just very impressive through two games he has been, which is no surprise. He had a lot of accolades coming out and, you know, well-decorated in his last year there at LSU. So, yeah, that to their running game. And then Trevor Lawrence, who's a very capable and good quarterback and, you know, seems to be a great leader as well. So he had a lot of success at Clemson, as we all know, and he's continued that at the NFL level.
Well, here we go. I think every year we've been talking. You've been here long enough now. You guys have played a lot of night games. You've been successful at night. A lot of times we talk about some of the memories of Monday night or Sunday night. But here, you know, in Buffalo, getting the fans, a 7:30 night game early in the season, it's got to be a big boost for your guys. And even kind of ramping up to it, right? The thought about it. I was talking with Juwan Smoot at practice the other day, and I know he's super excited for his first time in front of Bills Mafia, hopefully. But what's that like for you guys to get ready for that environment?
Well, believe it or not, we have to practice it because it's so unique. Today, even in our walkthroughs that we'll be going through today, the defense will be piping in crowd noise because the communication on the defense becomes a challenge, believe it or not. And
yeah.
We love it, but it is hard for us to communicate on defense at times because of the level of the crowd noise. And but again, we love it. We wouldn't trade it for anything. And it's just so cool to have that type of symmetry with our fan base, and we look forward to them. And I know, listen, people don't like coming here to play us, right? And a big part of it is the Bills Mafia.
No doubt about it. And a few weeks ago, you were on with Shopin the Bulldog, and you mentioned the stadium and seeing it when you come in. Coach, I was out there yesterday. Holy cow, that thing's going up quick. When you see that, are you like, every day it seems like there's a new level going up, Coach?
It's amazing, isn't it? But what a visual.
Yes.
For all of us driving in, driving out every day to watch it piece by piece go up. And it seems like, you know, I haven't gotten involved with it because obviously my focus is elsewhere right now. But I got to believe they're ahead of schedule. I hate to put any pressure on them by saying that, but it's like, geez Louise, man. It's like I'm thinking it's going to be ready in a month here, the way they're moving, it seems like, over there. So, no, they seems like they're doing a great job and pretty cool to watch, special for the fans and the organization.
It'll be special for the fans on Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Thanks a lot for this, Coach. Have a great practice today and tomorrow. We'll catch up next week. Good luck on Monday night.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, you got it. That is Sean McDermott, Buffalo Bills head coach, trending in the right direction for Dewan Smoot. Now, Javon Solomon sounds like he's also trending in the right direction. He didn't say that. I'm saying that. To be able to play, they've both been limited a couple days in a row, but that doesn't mean that he's going to play necessarily. Doesn't mean that Smoot is either, right? But when Sean says trending in the right direction, I would anticipate maybe Dewan Smoot is going to, going to play. As far as Solomon, I actually would think that maybe he might not even get a jersey still. And that's only because of numbers, folks. I mean, what they have at defensive end right now, you have to think about what they've done as far as, you know, the numbers they've gone with in games already. When you go back to like Thursday night, they elevated Kingsley Jonathan. When you go back to the previous Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals, they elevated Cameron Klein. So the guys that have been inactive have been Dewan Smoot and Javon Solomon at defensive end. Well, now Dewan Smoot's playing, you put him active, obviously, and then you just take out the guy you elevated, either Cameron Klein or Kingsley Jonathan. To me, it's a one-for-one swap. You don't have to elevate anyone now at defensive end, and you put Dewan Smoot in. That leaves Javon Solomon as maybe still being inactive. That doesn't mean he has to be. The Bills could feel that he provides something that they need in this particular matchup. So we'll see about that. The numbers come into play here. And then Casey Tuhill, who's also been a little bit limited, but he's played. He's been practicing. And he came in back in the game after it seemed like he got, you know, after he got banged up against the Miami Dolphins. So I just don't know if there's a spot for Solomon right now to be active. We'll see. The other one to watch for, Joe Andreessen. So we know that Terrell Bernard is not going to play. He's your starting middle linebacker. His backup is Baylen Spector. He's expected to start. He'll start in place of him. So that leaves your third string middle linebacker who generally isn't active was Joe Andreessen at the end of camp. But the Bills do have a couple of the linebackers who can play the mic, including Nicholas Morrow. My question is, does Nicholas Morrow become the backup mic to Baylen Spector, middle linebacker, or is that just Joe Andreessen going in that spot? You're going to have to activate either Andreessen or Eddie Ulofosio. I don't know if you'd really, is Eddie Ulofosio ready? I haven't seen him do it. I haven't seen him wear the green dot. If you activate Eddie Ulofosio as your backup middle linebacker to Baylen Spector and something does happen to Spector, is Eddie Ulofosio ready to do that? I haven't seen him or Nicholas Morrow really do that. They could be doing it in practice. But that lends me to Joe Andreessen probably being active. So we'll see. That's what they did. And then the following week, obviously, same thing. Joe Andreessen was inactive. Let me look at last week. Here we go. Don't have it there. I'm looking for the injury report. Game day roster. Here's the game day roster last week. The inactives, Taron Johnson, obviously, Andreessen and Ulofosio, Solomon and Smoot. There you go. The only difference was last week, Cole Bishop was active for the game where he wasn't in week one. Cole Bishop, Mike Edwards, how do they play a role in this week? Because as I've said all week, I think this matchup lies from the offensive side of the Jags to the defensive side of the Bills. I think the matchup lies in the Jags trying to attack the Bills' second level via the pass. Well, how do you combat that if you're the Bills? If you don't want Spector and Dorian Williams running around covering people all night, what you can do is your dime defense comes into play, your nickel defense, obviously, which you normally play, comes into play. Does a guy like Cole Bishop have a role on third down? Does a guy like Mike Edwards have a role on third down? What we've seen so far is Jamarcus Ingram having a role on those passing situations. So it'll be interesting how they play the numbers. Obviously a massive loss without Terrell Bernard. I mean, this team does not have Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, and Taron Johnson. And what's crazy is they could have all three of them sometime in December, right? Depending how it's really going for Milano and his recovery, we don't know. Depending how it really the diagnosis is for Terrell Bernard, even though we heard and it was reported it was more of a strain than a tear, but that's still going to keep him out several weeks. Johnson didn't go on IR. So from judging by that, it would feel to me like Johnson would be the closest, and then Bernard, and then Milano. But it's conceivable you could have all three of those guys playing for you in December, especially into January in the playoffs. Assuming the Bills make it, which they're in a pretty good position right now at 2-0. Okay. 803-0550 is the number. Let's take some calls today on whatever's on your mind on this game, including, here's my question to you. Do you get spooked by playing the Jags? Because there's a history here, right? There's a history here. And by the way, real quickly, before I move on, just want to remind everybody that Sean McDermott, when he came on WGR just a little while ago, it was brought to you by Northwest Bank for what's next. Get started at northwest.com, by Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. So thanks a lot to Sean McDermott. He came by a little bit earlier than normal, but that's good. We got that done. Now we'll get into some phone calls. We'll look around the league a little bit. I want to talk about this trend and these rules that I brought up a minute ago, and Jags and Bills Monday night, and then take a look around to the weekend. Adam Krautwurst joins me at 11:15 to get you set for your fantasy lineup. And what's the weather going to be like Monday night? Well, Patrick Hammer's going to join me at 11:30, as he always does on a Friday, to get us set for that. In the meantime, 803-0550. Are you spooked by playing the Jacksonville Jaguars? Is this a team you're like, I just can't believe it? Every time they play them, it seems like something weird happens. And you're not alone. Ed Oliver used the word weird many times yesterday talking to the media. Something weird always happens. It's weird. He's like, yeah, 9-6 down there against Urban Meyer. He didn't say Urban Meyer, but 9-6 they played down there. Then last year in London. So I'm going to run through some of the other weird games that you might or might not remember against Jacksonville historically. It hasn't just been the last few years, folks. It goes back a long time, some of the weird stuff. Now, this is like the conspiracy theory thing, right? I always say a conspiracy theory is easy to come up with because any event that happens, you can go back and just take whatever you want that led up to it and make it look like it was part of the conspiracy, right? Ooh, I can't believe that happened. Did you see that happen before it and that happened before it? Right. You could do that with anything. So we could do that here too, which is, okay, lots of weird stuff has happened against the Jags, right? Go back and find little things, which maybe they're not really weird. Maybe it's just stuff that happens around the league and games. But I would say it does qualify for me for weird stuff against the Jags. Call up at 803-0550. We'll get connected with you, our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Real quick about the goalposts. And I said I was being hypocritical earlier because I kind of want to change something here to, it's too easy for these kickers to make it. So I want to make it harder on them, but I'm being hypocritical because I want to make it easier on hitters in baseball and banning the shift. And I was for that. So I don't know. I guess you can go either way on a lot of this stuff, but then again, raising the crossbar, if you raise the crossbar, it might incentivize more punting once you get near midfield instead of a long kick, like near the 40-yard line. We'll see where it goes, though. But these kickers are just incredible right now. They really are. And I feel like that's the next thing that's going to happen. Like, yes, we're talking about too high safeties and lack of scoring, lack of passing, downfield. What's the response? People are thinking that officials will take care of it. They'll start calling more ticky-tack penalties, putting offenses in better position to allow them to do that. Maybe that happens. I don't know. But what about an actual rule to the game? Like, is there something they're going to do? Because what Mel Kiper said is just ridiculous. I'm for banning the shift. I'm not for banning two high safeties. Folks, two high safeties has been happening since the 70s. Okay? The Tampa 2 that Tony Dungy played in Tampa. It's called the Tampa 2 because he played it with Monty Kiffin. You know, and Tony Dungy was a Pittsburgh Steeler. They played a variation of that. He just tweaked it. They tweaked it. Him and Kiffin. The Tampa 2, two high safeties, has been around for decades. But suddenly we have to change it and ban it because offenses can't figure it out as much. And they're coming up with a good response, and credit to the offenses. They're actually responding the way they should. It's not ruining the game. It's making the game better to me that offenses have to figure this out, and we're watching it in real time. I hated these every week, every game, video game numbers being put up by all these players. It just, everything got out of whack. It's like every 2 weeks there was a new passing record being set. And I'm like, yeah, but the game, you can't touch anybody anymore. It's so easy. College games in the 60s and 50s, what are we doing? I'm glad. I want to see defense matter. I want to see strategy matter. I don't need 9-6 every week. 2017's okay with me. And you know what? You can mix in a 31-30. It's good. Nothing wrong with that. It shouldn't happen every game, though. I don't need to have offenses scoring 30 points a game to have a good football game. What I need is both sides to have a chance to beat each other, meaning offense and defense. That makes a good football game. Let's go to Jerry and Kenmore before we hit our first break. Go ahead, Jerry.
You know, I think you have to trust a sport to figure it out. It's, you know, there's smart coaches, there's huge coaching staffs. If you look at the other three major sports, hockey is different. There was the trap era when there were no goals scored and goalie equipment got big. But what they started to emphasize was speed and shooting and skill and the technology of the sticks. Now scoring is up. Baseball used to be about average and bunting and getting people on base. Now it's about exit velocity and launch angle and basketball, the 3-point. Like, the sport figures out how to score eventually because the amount of film, the amount of do you think any defensive back from the 70s saw as much film as a player sees in a week and knows about leverage and knows about tendencies and knows about motion? You know, they used to just go, hey, go cover that guy. You know, and you could or you couldn't. You know, we have 2 weeks of down offense, and a lot of people are worried about something that just let the sport itself figure it out.
Got it, man. Thanks a lot. 803-0550. I agree with a lot of that. Let the sport figure it out. We don't have to incentivize them through officiating. And what I said, rule changes, right? Let it figure it out. And I think they are doing that, Jerry. I think they are. 803-0550. We'll take a timeout here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you, taking your phone calls and getting you ready for Bills-Jags on Monday Night Football.
The London game was a weird game. Started very weird. It was just a very, very weird game. And I addressed my D-line about that, just about how weird these games could be. I remember the game we played in Jacksonville, and it was a sunny day. I mean, great day. I remember it vividly, but it was just a weird aura. And then playing in London, it was just I can't even explain it. It was just a weird game. And I ain't never beat these guys, so it's just weird, man.
We should have the bell, the counter, bing, 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 every time he says the word weird. That's Ed Oliver from yesterday. It is weird. Bills-Jags, I got some history for you. We're going to run through in a little while. Bills-Jags historical data, figures, the teams that play here. Josh, you ready? These two teams, including playoffs, have played a total of 19 times. How many have the Bills won? A little trivia for you.
Ooh, I'm going to go less than half, but I don't know if I want. I don't know. I'm going to go with 9. How about 9?
Great job. 9.
Really?
Good job, buddy. Yep.
Wow.
The Bills are 9-10 all time in 19 meetings, including the playoffs against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And of course, over the last couple of meetings, some weird things have happened. That is absolutely true. So let's get to Mike and Tonawanda. Are you spooked by the Jags? Mike, what do you think, man?
I'm actually not. I mean, I get there's been weird things that have happened, but again, we should say the same thing about the Tennessee Titans, too. Remember, we had struggles beating them, and I mean, we think about most, and then we waxed them on Monday Night Football like 2 seasons ago. Sometimes you just break through and just, you know, beat the team that you apparently was a boogeyman, you know? So I'm going to say no for that reason. Same thing you should do with the Titans.
You got it. Yeah. I agree with you, Mike. I don't like to draw that line and say it's the Jags. You know, it's always, you know, they have the Bills' number. It's a mental thing. But when I hear Ed Oliver talk like that, they're aware of it, right? There's something and weird stuff that happens. to me, it's different than Bills Dolphins and like owning a team. It's different than Patriots Bills for 20 years, pretty much, and owning them, right? Which is, that's the same coach, same quarterback, same group. You're playing them twice a year. It's just, that's just like a, you're married up and partnered up all the time. Here, it's, they've had different coaches and quarterbacks, not the last couple of meetings, I get it. What does Urban Meyer have to do with, you know, Doug Peterson and Urban Meyer and a rookie Trevor Lawrence who got hurt early in the game or during the game have to do with what happened last year in London? Nothing, I don't think, but I get it. Like, people are superstitious. You see the logo and you're like, oh, here we go. So 19 times they played. The first meeting between the two teams was in 1996, and it was actually 95, right? The playoff game. It's a playoff game. The first meeting they ever had was here at now Highmark Stadium, and it was actually Jim Kelly's last game. That starts the weirdness when you think about it. The Bills, I don't believe up until that point, had lost a home playoff game. That was their first home playoff loss. Jacksonville coming to town here in Buffalo in the 1996 wild card game. Tom Coughlin, Marv Levy, Jim Kelly, his last game. Kent Hall, his last game. Mark Brunell's the quarterback. If you remember that game, a lot of you do, it was Natron Means who ran for 175 yards and a touchdown, including a 62-yarder. That was the Bills' day that day. And the game came down at the end, right? I got to think about how this went down. The Jags won on a 45-yard field goal from Mike Hollis after they had tied it up, Jimmy Smith on a 2-yard pass from Mark Brunell. Bills started the game. The Bills actually were up 17-14, went back and forth after that. That's the start of the weirdness, the 96 wild card game. Then you go to the next year, 1997. They play in December that year. Bills lose 20-14. Trying to figure out exactly what this game was, if I remember it. I mean, the Bills weren't that good that year. They were 6-9, so maybe a little bit more nondescript. Now, the one that comes to mind after that, all right? The one that comes to mind after that. Do you remember the opener in 04? Who remembers the opener in 04? I doubt you do, Josh, right? The opener in 04?
Yeah, no, I don't remember much of anything from back then.
Okay, well, in the Bills Jaguars season opening game in 2004. The Bills are up 10-6 late in the game. The Jags get the ball. They throw the ball down the field, and there's a pass interference called on the Bills at the, let me find out where they are here, penalty. It wasn't a pass interference. It was an incredible catch made by Jimmy Smith over Nate Clements for 45 yards with a minute left. They get down inside the Bills' red zone. They get down to the seven-yard line, one play. Actually, had three plays. If you remember this from the opener, they actually had first and goal from the Bills' 7 with 14 seconds left, incomplete. Second and goal from the 7. 10 seconds left, incomplete. Third and goal from the 7. 7 seconds left, incomplete. Last play of the game, Bills up right now, 10-6. Byron Leftwich throws a jump ball into the back of the end zone. Ernest Wilford catches it and somehow gets 2 feet down with two guys draped on him. Replay shows he got down the feet. Jaguars win on the last play of the game on a walk-off touchdown, Josh. 2004, the opener. Crazy.
If anything happens like that this week,
oh my God.
I don't know what
else. You know what it actually reminded me of? It was very, very similar to last year's game against the Giants. But then the Giants missed on both. Remember, there was one that was the interference, and they redid it or something. Wasn't there two plays down there at the end of the game?
Yeah, and then
against the Giants?
I think wasn't it Taron Johnson that broke it up?
Yes.
On the very last one? Yeah.
And then there was a debate about interference, but it was very similar to that. But in this case, the Jags caught the ball, won the game. Ernest Wilford. Then, if you remember, several years later, the Bills go to London to play the Jags the first time they go to London to play the Jags. This is 2015, October of 2015. This is EJ Manuel, pick six from Telvin Smith, a Chris Clemens defensive fumble return, Jags up 27-3 in the second quarter. Then the Bills mount a comeback. Robert Woods, Dan Carpenter, a couple field goals. Marcus Easley, the special teams ace, deep from EJ Manuel. Corey Graham, a pick six to what you thought might have been the winner. And then the Jags get it. They march down, and there's a phantom, and I mean phantom, pass interference on Nickell Robey-Coleman. And the Jags win on a Blake Bortles to Allen Hurns 31-yard touchdown pass with 2 minutes left. 34-31. That's the game where Chris Gregg of the Bills caught the ball while standing out of bounds. And it cost the Bills a first down or whatever. Weird stuff, man. Weird stuff. And of course, then you have a couple years later, the 2017 playoff game. The Bills break the drought. They go down to Jacksonville. They lose 10-3. Do you remember the name of the player who caught the touchdown pass on fourth down? Ben Koyak from Blake Bortles. And even to this day, go back and watch the Ben Koyak kind of fumbled catch. I still don't think it was I don't think he had possession. I think he was still fumbling it. I'll believe that to this day. Bills lose 10-3. The Jags the following week went and smoked the Steelers, by the way, the next week in the playoffs. Then you get to 2018. That's Josh's rookie year. That's that pass to Robert Foster. Remember that one? Oh, my God. Saw a clip of it the other day again. Pretty incredible. Then, of course, the 9-6 game against Urban Meyer, and then the London game last year. Let's go out to Brad in East Aurora. I was just talking about that 0-4 game. Brad, you remember it?
Yes, I do. That was my very first Bills game. I was 11 years old, and I went with my dad. And I believe that last-second touchdown you're talking about was actually a push-out rule. He caught the ball and was pushed out of bounds, but they ruled it a touchdown.
Oh, my God. I got to go back. I'm going to look at it in the break. Because remember the old push-out rule. You can't do that anymore. I thought he got 2 feet down. I don't think so. But I'm going to go back and look, Brad, okay? I'm going to go back and look for you, okay? I like that. Yeah, thank Brad. I think he got 2 feet down. I don't think it's because they pushed him out and he would have came down. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. That's for sure. And we'll take a look at it. Thanks, Brad. I'll take a timeout here. We will come back. I'll take a look at that in the break. Ernest Wilford against the Bills in 2004. In the meantime, it's time to take a break, and we'll be back in a snap. And it's brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. All right, so we're having a bit of a debate about the Ernest Wilford catch in 2004 in the opener, Bills-Jags. So I went back and watched. We had a caller a little while ago say that he was ruled pushed out. I don't think so. I have the replay here. He caught it, and it looks to me like he got 2 feet in. Now, I will tell you, there's not a great angle to see the 2 feet, but it looks like he got the 2 feet in, and the referee called it a touchdown, did not say because he was pushed out. And it's also, man, games that weren't in high definition, right? Oh, my God. Like, watching these replays, these games are not in high definition. It's just crazy. But I'm watching the replay here, and he got 2 feet in. I'm going to watch it again here. Okay, it catches it. One. You know what? Yeah, I do see it now. Man, I guess you could make an argument the second foot didn't come in, but and he got pushed. But I'm watching one. Okay, here's his left foot coming down. And his right foot touched right at the boundary line. Right at the boundary line. Here's what I'll say. He may have not gotten the right foot down. Like, if you have all the replays we have today, maybe the heel touches the white. But he was called in. He wasn't called for a touchdown because of the push out. That's not what happened. It wasn't called a touchdown because he was pushed out. It was called a touchdown because the referee said he got in. Now, you can debate if that was the right call or not. Because on the replay, it is way too hard to tell if that right heel touched in the back on the end line. The white, because that would have been out of bounds then. Wild. 803-0550 if you want to chime in on any of that. That's a bad memory. there's been some good Jags memories along the way. I mean, Josh Allen's rookie year, that throw to like I said, Robert Foster was incredible. Bills won that one. That was November. Remember, Josh had just come back from the elbow injury, too. Didn't he get hurt in Houston like a few weeks before that? That was a game where he came back. Bills also won a game 28-21 in 2016. Who remembers this one? LeSean McCoy, 75 yards for a touchdown. He finishes the game, LeSean McCoy, with 19 for 103 and two touchdowns. Also had 31 yards receiving. LeSean had over 130 yards in that game. That was a nice memory against the Jags. It hasn't always been bad, even though it's been very weird a lot of times. Remember the playoff game? I brought it up earlier. Someone tweeted at me, and I appreciate this. Let me go back and find who wrote this here. Dave, thank you. I was at the Jags-Bills game. Means ran crazy, and Tony Boselli owned Bruce that day. Yes, he did. Boselli did a great job on Bruce Smith that day. No doubt. That was the playoff game. That was Kelly's last game. Hall's last game. Thanks a lot to my buddy Maniac, Trainwreck Sports, who tweeted out a screenshot of something I wrote 4 years ago today. I wrote this 4 years ago today. At 4:44 p.m., I love that. As a Syracuse guy, I love that. Wasn't intentional. 4:44 p.m. this day in 2020, I wrote on Twitter, quote, "The Bills have found their franchise quarterback. There's no more debating it. No matter how many memes you see making fun of a pass or how many people you read to tell you otherwise because they themselves simply can't accept it." Let me read that one more time. There's no debating it. No matter how many memes you see making fun of a pass or how many people you read to tell you otherwise because they themselves can't accept it. I wrote that 4 years ago. That was after, a day after, or the day of, I guess. It's the day of Josh Allen's first ever 400-yard passing game. That came against the Miami Dolphins in the COVID year when he just went deep after deep after deep, touchdown after touchdown, it seemed like. Huh. Thank you very much for that, Maniac and Trainwreck. Always appreciate it. 803-0550 is the number to call. If you would like to jump on board here, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Yeah, see, I think he got 2 feet down. I'm going to tweet this out maybe when we get to the next break, and I'll ask if you guys want to take a look. But one of the things I think is amazing to watch this is the lack of high definition. High definition television has changed the way we watch sports, and especially here. Like when you watch replays like this, and like, oh my God, I can't believe they can't even see that. Speaking of that, I went down the rabbit hole the other day. Talk about this on the podcast, Always Game Day in Buffalo. If you caught it, if you didn't catch it, thank you. Go download it. Myself, Matt Bove. It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. It's wherever you pod on audio. It's at Sal Sports on the YouTube channel. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel. You get all the videos too. So I talked about this on the podcast the other day. 50 years ago, last week, the Bills played a Monday night football game against the Oakland Raiders, at the time Oakland Raiders. And there's video of it you can watch. And it's old, you know, Highmark Stadium, but it's Rich Stadium at the time. It's only been a couple years old. What's incredible to me watching this, just look at the people in the stands and how they're dressed. No one's wearing like the team colors. It's just people coming from work, regular dress. It's a lot of brown and gray and black. There's no red, white, and blue. Like, when did that change? Over, when did people start really wearing their team colors to the games? Because certainly in 1974, they weren't doing that. It's like going to watch those old baseball, seeing the photos, the old baseball footage, and people in the stands, and wearing their caps, and their suits, and their fedoras, or whatever. Their top hats, I don't know. And the women in dresses. It's the same thing. Since 1974, it's a Monday Night Football game, and there's like nobody wearing, there's no jerseys. I doubt they sold them like that at the time. Certainly not like they do today. Wild. 80,000 people, and you wouldn't know they're there for a football game compared to what you see today, which is all red, white, and blue at a Bills game or the other team's colors here and there. Pretty crazy. When we come back after this timeout, we will take a look at week number 3 in the NFL. You have a Sunday to watch games and enjoy them and get your fantasy lineup set as well. Adam Krautwurst joins me when we return as well here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday.